Good morning. My name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. This morning's guest on With Respect is Christine Duboulay-Ellis. Christine is a world-renowned teacher, ballet dancer, world traveler, and a resident of Harbor Country and an artist. We'll be talking today with respect to Christine Duboulay-Ellis. We'll be right back. So, Christine, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And good. It's so nice to be here with you.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful day and outside, and what can you do? I mean, you have to be in a good mood.
Nothing better.
Christine, yeah. Tell us about yourself. Where are you from originally?
Well, I was born in Ealing, which is a western suburb of London. Mm-hmm. And my parents were... my father was English, but of Huguenot descent. Mm-hmm. And my mother was Irish, born in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And they met in Dublin. My father was over there with the Black and Tan Revolt. And he was in the Air Force, by the way. Okay. He was an Air Force pilot and... had been one since he was 18. He lied about his age and joined the RFC, Royal Flying Corps.
In the First World War,
yes.
You know, that's an interesting time. For our readers who don't immediately react to the black and tan, that was a time in the history of Ireland and England when Ireland was cutting the strings between itself.
Absolutely, yes.
And it was a difficult cutting of the strings. And... there was violence and there was unhappiness all around.
Yes, indeed.
And finally,
Ireland had a turbulent life.
I bet you did.
Ireland has.
Oh, Ireland.
Yes, absolutely. Indeed. Yes.
It's an interesting thing that I've always been fascinated by is watching the development of peoples, and of countries, how they start, they change, they stop, and whatnot. And I always thought about we read in history books about the big movements, the big wars, and the big inventions and that sort of thing, but sometimes we lose track of the effect of those big things on small people.
On small
and that's
people,
all of us,
that's true,
for
yeah.
small people when it comes down to it.
Anyhow, my mother married my father when she was 2 days past 21 because her father did not approve of the union.
Ah.
And so she came to England, and my parents were married in East Grinstead, Sussex. Mm-hmm. That is, I always consider my home. And then my father went from various aerodromes to various aerodromes around mm-hmm. the London area.
So we would call you here an Air Force brat.
Yes, yet I didn't fly until many, many years later.
Uh-huh.
Then my father was stationed in Iraq for a while and then in Palestine. And at that time, I was about 3 and a half, I think. And my mother and I went out to visit him. So I remember that journey very well, and we stayed in Palestine near Jaffa for 6 months, I think. And then my mother and I came back to England, and my father came later, but apparently things weren't going so well, so they separated. And I stayed with my mother, and we went back to Ealing, where I was born, and I was ready to go to kindergarten at that time, so then I went to a private girls' school, and I stayed there till I left school when I was only just 15, because I decided to be a ballet dancer, and the thought of school, any more school, was not in the agenda. So, unfortunately, while I was at school, there was not a ballet class, a sort of fancy dancing, as we used to call it. And a very good teacher who was an ex-student of the school. And she had been teaching in London for a lady who taught more serious ballet. And so she suggested to my mother that she thought I had enough talent that I should go and take classes with this lady. And her name was Doris Stainer. She was actually Leslie Howard, the actor's sister.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. And I studied with her and then decided I really wanted to do it seriously. So one of the students there had gone to the Sadler's Wells Ballet School. And I thought, well, if she can, so can I.
no competition here.
Well, I don't know. I think it was. Anyhow, I went for an audition and they accepted me. And that was in 1938. And I went to the school in the September of 38 and had a wonderful time, just loved it. And then early 1939 was a time when the Sadler's Wells Ballet put on the first performance of The Sleeping Beauty. It was called The Sleeping Princess then. But it's
Tchaikovsky's?
Yes. The full length of 3 acts. And Margot Fontaine was the Princess Aurora. That was the very first time that it had been done in England. And
Margot Fontaine is such a famous name.
Oh, yeah. She was a good friend of ours, too. Anyhow, I was delighted because I was chosen to be a page to the king and queen.
Right.
So I was on. And so that was thrilling. And then there was a performance for the French president at the Royal Opera House. I think it was in the March. In fact, it was March the 22nd, which became the day of our wedding. Our wedding date was I remember that date always. And so then I stayed at the school until the summer, when they always had a summer break.
Yes.
And my mother and I went, as always, to Ireland, to her family home just outside Dublin. And we then went to visit an old lady, aunt of my mother's, up in Mayo, in a divine place up in Mayo.
Mayo thatch, is such a great place.
Thatch cottage on a little peninsula almost by the ocean. It was just heaven. And I was out on a little rowing boat by myself when we heard the news that war had broken out.
September of 1938, or shortly thereafter?
The 3rd of September.
September 3rd, that's right.
September 3rd. And so my mother wondered what to do. We went back to Dublin, where we were staying, and she wrote to Ninette de Valois, who was the directress of the Sadler's Wells Ballet, famous lady, and said, what should I do? And she wrote back and said, stay where you are. Nothing's happening. The school is not operating at the moment. And she knew of a very good teacher in Dublin. And she said, go to her and just stay there and see how things work out. Well, I stayed there and worked with this lady for 2 years and did a lot of performing. She had a little group, so I got a lot of experience that mm-hmm. way. And then my mother and I decided we couldn't stay in England, in Ireland anymore. We had to go back to England. Just couldn't bear it. Didn't matter whether the bombs were coming down, just to get home. And we had a friend who was looking after our house, and we wanted to get back to her. So,
now this, you were still living in Ealing at this point?
Yes, in Sussex? Yes. By this time, we had moved and were sharing a large flat with a friend and who had a large area of garden. So that pleased both of us, especially my mother. And so we went back, and I went immediately to the Sadler's Wells. What was so wonderful was that the school was in the theater, so that the students entered the stage door. And where we took class was a room right next to the dress circle. And we could just go in and look at rehearsals or see what was happening on the stage. I learned almost more that way than the classes, you know, seeing how the dancers behaved.
Now, the dress circle, for those of our friends who have not gone to the theater in England, is the closest to the theater, to the stage.
Yes, itself. It's like the first balcony, yes. If you like. Yes. And so we used to open the door and look. And of course, going in and out of the theater, the stage door, we saw the dancers and found our favorites. And little was I to know that one of my favorites would become my husband.
This is good. I can see romance coming here.
A little while later. So anyhow, they took me back into the school and put me into the advanced class, and that was nice. But then, as everybody did in England during the war, got your call-up papers, and mm-hmm. I got mine, and I wondered, what am I going to do? Mm. I don't really want to go. And my father, I thought, might be able to help me get into some special area. Mm-hmm. But then a friend of mine said that she heard there was going to be auditions for another company called the International Ballet, which had been recently formed. It was about a year old, but did good works and mm-hmm. had good mm-hmm. dancers. So I went and auditioned and was accepted, which I was happy about. And they were able somehow to keep the dancers out of the services. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their method was, but
now, did you have brothers or sisters?
No, I was the only child.
Oh, poor baby. I think my daughter is an only child, and when she was younger, she said, "Oh, I wish that I had a little brother or sister." And so life goes on. So I asked her this the other day. Did you still want that brother's? No, thank you. I'm just happy with what I am.
Yes. Yes.
But now you, the International, did that tour just in the UK or
yes,
elsewhere?
Yes. In fact, just in England. England and Wales. We did not go to Ireland.
Or Scotland.
Yes, we went to Scotland. Yes. Okay. We didn't go across the seas.
Okay. But now you were at this time, I'm saying roughly 16, 17, 18 in that range.
Yes.
And did you, you started off as a page, but your parts must have gotten expanded a little bit.
Oh, yes, they did. Not while I was with the Sadler's Wells, though when I went back after the war, the company was performing at the New Theatre in London because the Sadler's Wells was closed and used as a refugee place, really, for people who had been bombed out and had nowhere to stay.
I want to go back just for a minute. Mm-hmm. Your experience during the war in London has always been something interesting to me. And I will tell you that I lived in London for a few months studying to be a barrister the Temple. And I lived in a small flat in Kensington off the High Street.
Yes.
Now, the time that I was there, we had a coal miner strike, we had a power worker strike.
Billy Elliot.
That's right. We had all of this, plus we had the IRA bombing campaign of Christmas of 73.
Oh.
And I was very close to one bomb that went off. I was not too far from a second bomb that went off, and a third bomb of many that went off in that period of time was in the very spot that my brother and I were one day before.
Oh, my goodness.
But the point, I remember that whole time was it's like an out-of-body experience, mm-hmm. because you did have power rationing, you had coal rationing, you had transportation was disrupted. People just had to make do.
Yes.
And then finally we had these bombs going off, and you literally didn't know whether you were going to walk down the street and not be blown up.
That was the same during the war. I was there during the V1 and the V2. And the V1 was the little flying bomb, mm-hmm. and it sounded like a motorbike. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it would stop, and you had no idea where it would fall, absolutely mm-hmm. no idea. So that was kind of scary. And we'd hear it during performances.
Mm.
And just wonder, and you had to keep going, you know, there's nothing you could do. So that was bad.
We're going to take a break right now. We're mm-hmm. talking to Christine Duboulay Ellis. She is a ballet dancer and teacher. We're going to be talking also about her art. We'll be right back. Now back with Christine Duboulay Ellis, a teacher, an artist with her feet, as a ballet dancer, and also with different forms of actual physical art. Christine, when we took a break, we began to talk about what it was like to live and to perform in London during the Blitz. And you gave me a graphic image when I was just listening to you about V1 bombs coming in. And you were performing. You would be performing.
Yes, yes.
And then all of a sudden they would stop everybody in the audience
knew. Yes, they all knew and just kept going. Just kept going.
That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Then the V1, the V2 was in a way worse because there was absolutely no warning. You couldn't hear anything. You
heard the explosion.
Just the explosion, and if you were there, you were gone. You know. The other interesting thing, too, was during all that time, people who either bombed out or too afraid to live in their homes mm-hmm. went down to the underground platforms. Mm-hmm. And I remember, because I went home by tube to Ealing every evening after performances or whatever, and walking over all these people lying on the platform trying to sleep or whatever. It was amazing, absolutely amazing.
We've had movies, we've had photography, we've had sketches and art of various kinds, and description of what it was like to be in the tubes when the bombs were coming down or in, mm-hmm. in London. Mm-hmm. What effect did that have on you? It must have had some effect.
Well, really, you just had to keep going. If you stopped to think about it too much, it would really have upset one. Mm-hmm. One had to keep going. Everybody kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting thing was that all the trains and buses had heavy mesh on the windows
mm-hmm.
to eliminate
flying glass,
yes. And it was almost impossible to see where you were. Once the trains were outside from underground, there was a tiny little diamond in each window, and in the dark, there was no light. It was a total blackout, of course. That was mm-hmm. essential. So you simply had to guess where you were, mm-hmm. count the stations to know where you had to get off.
Do they have the magic voice saying, mind the gap, mind the gap?
I don't remember about that. But anyhow... So it was an interesting time, and the International performed a lot in London, so we were there
mm-hmm.
during a lot of the bombing. But after that, or during that time, I kept writing to Ninette de Valois and saying, was there any chance that I could get into the company?
Of the Settlers' Well.
Yes, Settlers' Wells. And she quite rightly, in her usual sensible fashion, said that she would not consider it at the moment because I owed my position to the International Ballet. They'd been kind enough to take me.
Mm-hmm.
And she said once the war was over, she would certainly consider it, and that they were planning to open at Covent Garden in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had... My contract with the International was up in December of 45, so that sort of worked out rather well.
Mm-hmm.
And so de Valois said she'd certainly take me. She needed extra dancers. So I went to Covent Garden for my first class with the Settlers' Wells Ballet. That was a thrilling day. And
startlingly beautiful building, Sadler, Covent
Opera
Garden.
House.
Covent Garden.
Oh,
oh,
I love it. Absolutely beautiful. And the auditorium is just glorious.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that's when I met Richard, my husband, because he had been in the war. He was in the Navy. He had been originally one of the members of the Settlers' Wells Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
He joined it when he was about 16, 17, in 1933 for the third season, and stayed with the company and grew to be a very fine dancer and created many roles, which was interesting. And then the war broke out. And he said that he did not want to go into the army, so in preference, he volunteered for the Navy and went to the Navy
mm-hmm.
and went through the ranks. He finally became lieutenant, and he trained for flotilla. He had a flotilla of landing craft.
Mm-hmm.
Which on D-Day, he took American troops. He was the leader of commander of 18 landing boats.
Yes,
and taking American troops to Omaha Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he was on D-Day, and he survived.
Dramatic.
Yes, it was evidently.
Oh,
amazing.
From everything that I have read and heard and talked to people, that time was dramatic.
Absolutely. But thank goodness he survived and returned to the company, not in very good shape.
not wounded, but not a dancer at that point.
He's got lots of tales about the war, but that's... sidetracking a little bit. But anyhow, he returned to the Sadler's Wells when it started at Covent Garden in 1946.
Now, you saw him performing a role and fell in love, or what?
No. I didn't fall in love with him until after we had met back at Covent Garden, but I had always liked him very much when I was a student. He was always one of my favorite dancers. And there was one day, I was at art school, going to an art school in London at a place called Holborn, and that was where there was a tube station. And Richard went to the same tube station, and there was this one day when he was going, you know, they have these very high escalators.
Oh, yes, famously so.
Yes, famously so. And he was going up, and I was going down, or vice versa. Anyhow, he turned and smiled at me, and that did it.
All right.
Oh, well.
The smile.
he noticed a student, and I reminded him of that afterwards when we finally met officially. So then the next year we were married, and it was wonderful. Then,
all right, I get to ask this question because both of us are above 30. So how old were you when you got married?
I was 23.
And he was?
He was 29.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so let's see. Yes, and the company toured a lot. We went on one tour of Europe where we did six capitals. We did Brussels and Paris and Prague. And, no, not all capitals. Then we went to Warsaw. We were the first company to perform in Warsaw after the war.
Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Chilling, I would imagine.
In a way, and yet so, it was so devastated. It was unbelievable. We were told that we had arrived. We went by train, and when we got there, they said, this is it, and there was nothing. I mean, there was a sort of platform, and that was all there was. Anyhow, we had a wonderful time there, and the performances were quite amazing. They had restored the theater. It was one of the first things they restored, which I thought was wonderful. You saw a lot of people walking around with wheelbarrows, picking up bricks, anything to rebuild. And as I say, I think one of the first things they rebuilt was the theater. And we performed. We were there quite a few days. The first night, we could hardly get onto the stage because there were people climbing all up the wings and anything to just get near us. And then they started clapping. They clapped in time with everything.
It was
so moving. It really was. You know, they'd been starved of anything like that.
And their city was just
absolutely
destroyed.
Devastated.
Absolutely devastated.
They took us on a tour of the city, and they showed us what was left of the ghetto, which was creepy.
Creepy is right. So, we're going to take a break right now. Oh. We're talking with Christine Duboulay-Ellis, a ballet dancer, teacher, and now an artist. We'll be right back. We're back now with Christine Duboulay-Ellis, a dancer extraordinaire from Chicago and Sawyer, and now an artist. We're just talking about you've just gotten married to Richard, and he also is a dancer.
Yes.
Now, did he perform with you in the company? So were the two of you going around together?
Yes. We weren't allowed to dance together very much because Frederick Ashton, who was the major choreographer for the company, didn't like married couples working together. So he allowed us two on one occasion, but otherwise it was just by chance if we did dance together. But we were in the same company. And
go ahead.
On the subject of touring, Warsaw, of course, was a very special occasion. And after that, I think we went we were supposed to go to Stockholm, but we went to Malmö instead for some political problem. But perhaps the most exciting tour that we did was the first one that the company, the Sadler's Wells Ballet, did in America. We came to America for the first time in 1949 and opened at the Metropolitan Opera House. That was quite an occasion. Absolutely fantastic. Margot Fonteyn was going to be Princess Aurora because we did Sleeping Beauty to open with. And we were all very nervous about that because we all knew how marvelous Margot was. We all adored her as a dancer, as a person. But Moira Scherer had been gaining all the kudos lately because of her role in The Red Shoes, the film The Red Shoes. And we were thinking that the Americans would pick up on her name more than on Margot. So it really depended on Margot herself and her performance. And she was so absolutely fantastic. The company, the audience went absolutely crazy.
How was it? The reaction to the difference? Was there a different reaction that the audiences in? You've talked about Prague and Warsaw and London and Malmo and now New York. Do the audiences turn on, turn off differently? Or?
Yes, we found that the American audiences applauded almost all the time too, but mostly for technical feats and so on. But it was exciting, you know. And after our English audiences, which are a lot more reserved, we enjoyed all the accolades that we got. And it was quite remarkable, the success that we had. And that first tour, we didn't go very far afield. We went to Canada and did a few performances there, but it was only a six-week tour, I believe. Then the second year, we came back and did a coast-to-coast tour. So we started again in New York, and then we went to Washington. We went all the way down through Richmond and Houston, and then went around to Los Angeles and San Francisco and all over the place. I had forgotten how many cities we went to. And we went by train in those days.
Yeah.
And we had our own coaches. There were five coaches. SW1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 Sadler's Wells.
Yes.
And they attached us to whatever train was going to whatever city we were supposed to
be. Now, you and Richard were married. Were you allowed to live together?
Yes, we were.
Well, that's good.
Yes, we were, which was very nice. And we usually finished up with the best rooms in hotels because we were married. And so everyone used to congregate in our room to have parties. So, good time.
Was there great camaraderie between or was there tension, jealousies?
No, not much. Very, very little. Really, very
little. So basically you got along together.
Oh, yes. It was wonderful. And still friends with quite a few of the company. And what was I going to say? Oh, it's about the traveling. We were on the second tour, we were in Chicago at Christmas time. And that was fun because David Webster, who was the executive director of the Sadler's Wells, said that he wanted to have a party for us. He wasn't going to be there, so he arranged. We were staying at the Sherman Hotel, the old Sherman, and he arranged for the staff to give us a party. And we had one of the best parties ever. It was just marvelous.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, dear, do we have to do that?
we're at a point.
work that one out. It was 1950.
Whatever.
Whatever.
At any rate, the point I mean, you were young, The two of you were young. You were with other young people. You're having a great time. It was the prime of your life.
Absolutely, yes. And that first performance in New York was perhaps the most thrilling performance we were ever in. Never to be repeated.
But you enjoyed Chicago.
Oh, we loved it. We absolutely loved Chicago. Because, you know, we'd been on tour, and sometimes you have to perform in a high school basketball arena.
Mm-hmm.
No theater at all, and you go and put on your makeup in the locker rooms, and not exactly conducive to to dancing. So to come to the Civic Opera House was just a great pleasure.
Again, a magnificent venue, I would imagine.
Yes, yes, it was lovely to play there. And so that was a long tour. Another interesting thing about those tours, off the subject of dancing, the fashion houses in London, quite a few of them, had the idea of dressing all of us, the girls, and using us as models for their fashions. And so we were dressed. We were given coats and suits and cocktail dresses and shoes and hats. It was quite wonderful. I did that for both tours, and the boys were pretty upset that they got nothing the first year. So they tried to correct that a little bit. They got something to wear the second tour. Nothing like we did.
No, though, they're just boys.
It's funny. It's always been the way, but ballet companies always been called girls and boys.
Yeah. All the way through. I mean, not just...
Yes,
regardless of the age.
Yes, exactly. I think it's changing a little bit now, but it always was the girls and the boys, no matter what your age.
But now you at some point, you and Richard came to Chicago to stay.
Yes, well...
What brought that about?
Yes, well, that was about the fact that at one point, we were on tour in Germany, and Richard... was performing, and suddenly his back went out completely, and he was just about to lift a girl, an overhead lift, and he said, "Pam, I can't do it." And he had another two ballets to perform, which he did, and then we went back to the hotel, and the next morning he woke up and he said, "I can't move." I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. So they flew him back to London and discovered that he'd had a slipped disc. And so he was out of action for quite a while and went back and never quite got back into shape. Now never quite the same.
Here's the fellow who, in the Second World War, was a commander of a flotilla of landing boats at D-Day.
Yes.
And survived the landing.
Yeah, but didn't.
And didn't
no,
cause a problem.
No,
and a slipped disc put him out of commission.
Right. Anyhow, we decided that we'd have to look elsewhere for work. I could have stayed on, but Richard had to find something else to do. And of excuse me, de Valois had some ideas and was wonderful to Richard, gave him freedom of going to the school and seeing all the classes, learning a little about teaching. Thank you. Stagecraft allowed him to be ASM for a while and a lot of things around the theater. So he really... learned a great deal thanks to her.
Mm-hmm.
But during that time, we got an offer from a lady in Chicago that we had met on the second tour. And she very much wanted to start a ballet school in Chicago based on the Sadler's Wells training. I don't think she had any idea what that was. But anyhow,
but she liked what she
yes,
saw.
Yes, exactly. And so... the outcome was that Richard came in early 1952 to see the lay of the land and to start the get the studio ready mm-hmm. and so on. It was, they had to find a studio and put up bars and mirrors and all that sort of thing. And all went along for a while, and then he found that the woman was really had no idea. She wanted to run a school that was going to pack everybody in and make
lots of money.
Yeah. With how to teach.
Yeah.
And we had our own ideas, and she didn't like them. We wanted graded classes, and of course that meant that there weren't many in each, and that mm-hmm. she didn't approve of that. Well, the outcome was that Richard said, well, the only way I can cope is to have Christine come over. So 3 months later, I joined him, and here we are, been here ever since.
Well, and you like the Chicago and now Michigan area.
That's another story. But going back to this school, after about 18 months, the lady fired Richard.
The hell you say? Fired her.
Fired him. And thought that I would stay. She was, poor lady, was demented. She was absolutely demented. So we left. We took everything with us, all our music, all the costumes I'd made for the performances that we'd done, a typewriter, everything that we owned.
It wasn't nailed down, yes.
Exactly, and walked out, and most of the students came with us. She locked some of them in the dressing room so they couldn't come with us. I mean, this is the type of... This is what, and so there we were on the sidewalk with all our belongings.
Oh, you're kidding. This is a one time.
Yeah.
You all walk out. You're thrown out.
Absolutely.
Some of them are the poor kids are locked back.
Right. And so the next day, the parents of one of our students called and said they would very much like to assist us in starting a school of our own. And that's what happened. And that's how the Ellis Duboulay School of Ballet came into being. So that started in 1954. And
it lasted until?
40 years.
40 years.
Yes.
40 years. Remarkable time. We're going to talk mm-hmm. about that in a minute, but we've now taken you from Ireland to with a fighter pilot as a father.
Yes.
From Essex to Sussex. Sorry. Mm-hmm. To London.
Yeah.
Ealing, performing at the Sadler Wells, the Bombs, the time of the Blitz.
Our tours of
Phenomenally Europe. Interesting time. Mm. We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Christine Duboulay Ellis from Sawyer, Michigan.
Right, correct.
We'll be right back. We're back now with Christine Duboulay Ellis, artist, and we're going to be talking about your art. We have to talk about your art, but well known as a dancer and instructor of other dancers, ballet dancers in the Chicago area. Christine, when we broke, you were just been thrown out. You were living on the street. You got your typewriter.
Yes.
You have some of your students. Others are locked in a chamber in a garret up in the old studio. But it all worked out.
Yes,
you
it
got
did
your
indeed.
School, and you began to teach and taught for these many years, for 40 years.
40 years, yes.
Tell me about some of the people that came through your group.
Well,
and came through and worked with you. I mean, you've had friends of all different, all over the map here.
Yes, well, many of our students have performed in some of the best ballet companies, and but we had some interesting people pass through. I think perhaps the most interesting was Audrey Hepburn.
Ah.
And actually, there's another story about Audrey going back to Richard, if I may go
sure,
back
absolutely.
There. There was a time before I knew him, just before the beginning of the war, when the Sadler's Wells Ballet was asked to go on a tour of Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And they were based in The Hague and were going to go to Eindhoven and Arnhem and places like that. And they went to Arnhem and saw a lot of military activity going mm-hmm. on, forces and guns mm-hmm. and what on their way. They were driven by bus to Arnhem. Anyhow, at the end of the performance there, and by the way, Richard danced the Paterner Pas de Deux with Margot Fonteyn at that performance. After the performance, a little girl came onto the stage and presented Nanette de Valois with a bouquet of flowers. Mm-hmm. That little girl was Audrey Hepburn, who stayed in Holland and was another Anne Frank, if you like. She went
through a great heroine.
Really amazing, and of course became the beloved film actress.
Yes. But, you know, but as a person, that her work during the war in Holland, made her an extraordinary person.
Oh yes, indeed. And then she was in Chicago. She came to do Gigi, mm-hmm. the play, and through the British consul that we knew, she came to classes with us. Mm-hmm. The whole time she was in the play, and she'd come three or four times a week. It was absolute joy to have her. She was wonderful. She was a very good dancer, lovely dancer. So it was a pleasure. And Richard always said, oh, I'm going to teach the morning class. So Audrey's coming. He wouldn't let me. So that was one of the highlights.
Well, now, in the course of your teaching, did you only stay in the Chicago area, or did you expand your reach beyond Chicago?
No, we always had studios. We had, actually, over the 40 years, we had 6 or 7 different studios, but they were all in the Loop,
mm-hmm.
and that was our base.
And go ahead.
Then after time, we realized that we had some very talented students, mm-hmm. including 3 boys mm-hmm. who seemed to be talented in the choreographing. And so we let them try out a few things and eventually formed a small dancing group, ballet group. And we eventually called it the Illinois Ballet, and mm-hmm. we performed in and around Chicago for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And also did many, many performances with Channel 11, WTTW.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was wonderful and a great experience for the dancers.
But now, at some point, you came to Sawyer, Michigan.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, 2 very dear friends of ours, Ted and Barbara Wilson, we had met them at ballet performances, and they adored ballet and knew a lot about it, though they weren't dancers. They were married, but they were not dancers, but they became very dear friends. And I think it must have been in the 70s. They said they were going to buy a house in Michigan, and we must come out and visit them. So I think we were about their first visitors, and the house was just off Holloway Drive mm-hmm. in Sawyer. And we went there so many times, and then eventually we got to know a lot of people, and they said, why don't you have a house out here? Why don't you come and live out here too? Well, we were teaching, and classes finished late on a Saturday, so it was only Sunday off, and it didn't really make sense just to have a place for one day a week. And so we said, well, maybe later on. Well, later on, circumstances changed, and so we did start to seriously look for somewhere. And a friend told us about this one house. We looked everywhere. We went all over the place, but we found this one house. We're on Tower Hill Road, and it was exactly what we were looking for. So that was 1989.
Yeah, so in 1989 is when you bought your home.
That's right, yes.
And then what?
Then we were able to come out quite a bit more, and sometimes I would come out by train, and Richard was here already and would come to the train and pick me up, or vice versa. And gradually we were able to stay out a little bit longer and then spend summers out here too. And I was an avid gardener, so it was lovely to have room to start gardening because there was absolutely nothing there, really.
But now you're into art.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've been into art ever since I was in school because they had a very good art class there, and I learned a lot about drawing and loved it, and evidently did very well because I used to get top marks for my drawing. So much so that they... once a week, there was an old, not very old, but an older woman who came to teach a small group of the students landscaping, watercolor landscapes. And so they suggested that I should join that class. They thought I ought to. And I did, and absolutely adored it. I loved it. And did a lot of watercolor work. In the winter, of course, we couldn't go outdoors. English winters, not conducive.
Oh, I know those. Miserable.
So we used to do still life and that sort of thing, but I still enjoyed it. And whenever my mother and I went on holiday to Ireland, that was wonderful subjects there for me. And so I did a lot when I was on holiday. And I also entered a lot of competitions at Royal Drawing Society and got high marks for those. So altogether, I was pleased about it. But then I decided that I wanted to be a dancer. So I couldn't do both. They're both full-time jobs. And so I thought, well, I can be an artist. I can paint when I'm much older, maybe even in a wheelchair, but I can wait a little while, whereas I couldn't wait dancing, to be dancing. So that was the way it was. And then years and years later, in fact, it was in the 80s, when Ted Wilson, who had introduced us to Sawyer, came to the house one day, and we were talking. He said he used to do art in school, and I said, well, so did I. And he said, do you have any of your things? And I said, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. So can I see them? And I said, yes. And so so I showed him what I had, and he was very, very enthusiastic about it. And he said, oh, you should start again. And so when he'd left, I sort of really thought about it, and I thought, maybe I will. That would be fun. I still had my paints, and I still had my brushes. And so I sat down and did a little painting, and I was quite pleased with what I did. And thought, well, maybe I haven't forgotten it all. And so that's how it started in the 80s, and then I did a lot of work, and Ted said, well, you really ought to have an exhibition. And we said, Richard and I thought about it, and we thought, well, the studio would be an ideal locale. And Richard covered up all the studio mirrors with black cloth, and I hung the paintings on the black cloth, and it made an ideal exhibit. And I did extremely well on the first one and sort of kept going, and I sold a lot of paintings, so I was really excited about that. And then when we gave up teaching, I had even more time. And then it must be about 3 years, the art attack here in the Harbor County. Fritz and Martha Olson knew that I did watercolors and asked me to be part of their presentation for the art attack. And so with all his beautiful sculptures, and they had two or three other artists also at exhibiting, but I was really the only conventional one. But they thought it was...
People could actually understand what
well,
you
said. Well, I don't know about that, but it was a totally different style that they thought was a good combination. And so I exhibited then, and everything went extremely well. And so the next day I went back and said I'd better collect my remaining paintings. And they said, well, why don't you leave them for another few days? So I left them. And then the next week I went back, and they decided that they would like to have me on permanent exhibit.
I'll be darned.
So it was wonderful. I was really thrilled about that because it's such a beautiful gallery. It's absolutely spectacular. And
This is in Sawyer.
Yes.
Yes.
On Holloway Drive.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely locale. It's strange because I used to go by that building because Ted and Barbara Wilson lived just around the corner there. And it used to be an azalea greenhouse. And then that was let go and the building was sort of falling into disrepair. And then suddenly... Richard and I were driving by and noticed that something was happening. And so we went in and introduced ourselves to Fritz and Martha, and we've been...
Ever since. Of all the things that you've done, I know that you said that your performance in New York at the Met was extremely impressive to you. What was the most unique... Aside from that, the unique thing that happened to you that that helped direct you where you wanted to go?
Well, sort of circumstances more than anything, really, because, as I say, Richard had hurt his back, and so we had to make a decision of what to do with our lives. So coming to America was a very big decision to make, but one we never, ever regretted for one moment. But
and America's not regretted it either.
Well, that's nice of you. Very nice to say.
Well,
That was a very special moment in our lives to make that decision. It was really hard.
I imagine extremely, extremely difficult.
Especially if we had to be separated for a while, too. I mean, he was going off to an unknown place, an unknown everything.
Might have been going to the Antarctic, for all you knew.
Well, we knew it wasn't that because he was going to Chicago, and we knew that was all right. But what was ahead for him and whether it would work out and starting a school and...
Would you do it all over again and do it, or would you do it differently?
Well, I wouldn't go and teach for anybody else again. Being our own bosses was a good idea because we had a lot of ideas and principles that we wanted to...
Inculcate into people.
Yes.
We've been talking to Christine Dumoulay, Dumoulay Ellis, an artist, dancer, teacher of ballet, and resident of Sawyer in Harbor Country. Thank you very much for being with us today. It was a real delight to hear about your life.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's been delightful talking to you. I've really enjoyed it.
Good.
Very much.
The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every Sunday morning at 11 and every Thursday morning at 10. And remember, if you show respect to others, respect will be shown to you.